Welcome to this week's Ortho Digest Rundown for August 10, 2026. This week, we indexed 146 new orthopedic studies across 34 journals. The 75 highest impact studies are featured on the site, and we're covering the top 25 studies in this audio digest. As always, studies are ranked by our impact algorithm, which weighs journal tier and level of evidence. Let's start with our first study. Jiang and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Significant Anxiolytic Effect and Enhanced Recovery Benefits of Perioperative Low-Dose Olanzapine in Patients with Anxiety Undergoing Total Hip Arthroplasty, a randomized controlled trial. This single-center randomized controlled trial enrolled primary total hip arthroplasty patients with preoperative STAIS greater than or equal to 40. And randomized them to oral olanzapine 2.5 mg, alprazolam 0.4 mg, or placebo, nightly for 5 perioperative days. Olanzapine produced significantly lower STAIS scores on PODs 1 and 3, significantly lower resting visual analog scores on PODs 1 through 3, reduced PONV incidence, and lower opioid consumption on PODs 1 through 3 versus both comparators. Both active treatment arms outperformed placebo on PSQI sleep quality at POD3, and the olanzapine group demonstrated superior Harris HIP scores and HOS at follow-up, with no significant difference in adverse events across groups. One limitation to note is the absence of reported blinding methodology and single institution enrollment, which limits generalizability and introduces risk of assessor bias in subjective outcomes. Overall, perioperative low-dose olanzapine, 2.5 mg nightly times 5 days, reduced STAIS anxiety scores, resting visual analog pain scores on PODs 1 through 3, and opioid consumption compared to both alprazolam and placebo in anxious total hip arthroplasty patients. Moving on, Aleem and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled The Impact of Lesser Tuberosity Osteotomy Repair After Reverse Total Shoulder Arthroplasty, a randomized controlled trial. This single institution, patient-blinded randomized controlled trial asked whether LTO repair during reverse total shoulder arthroplasty improves functional outcomes versus no subscapularis reattachment. Patients with an intact subscapularis were randomized to LTO repair or no repair, with ASCS score as the primary outcome. At 2 years, the repair group achieved significantly higher ASCS scores of 90.4 versus 82.3, and 7 times greater odds of improved internal rotation without differences in other planes of motion. One limitation to note is that 2-year follow-up is insufficient to determine whether LTO healing is durable or whether the functional advantage persists over time. LTO repair after reverse total shoulder arthroplasty produced significantly higher ASCS scores at 90.4 versus 82.3, and 7-fold better odds of improved internal rotation at 2 years compared to no repair. Moving on, Eljagi and colleagues published in American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Adductor Canal Block and Local Anesthetic versus Local Anesthetic Alone in Anterior Cruciate Ligament Reconstruction, a double-blind, randomized controlled trial. This double-blind randomized controlled trial compared LIA plus ACB versus LIA plus sham in 100 patients undergoing anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction under general anesthesia, with 24-hour opioid consumption as the primary endpoint. No significant differences were found in opioid consumption, visual analog pain scores at 24 hours, SLR performance at 3 hours, QR15 on POD1, or knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score at 1 week. LIA alone appears sufficient for routine perioperative analgesia in anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction, making routine ACB addition unnecessary. One limitation to note is that the study does not report graft type distribution, and hamstring versus quadriceps tendon harvest introduces differential donor site pain that could confound opioid consumption data. Overall, adding ACB to LIA in anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction did not reduce 24-hour opioid consumption or improve any secondary outcome versus LIA alone in this double-blind randomized controlled trial of 100 patients. Moving on, Poe and colleagues published in Spine, titled Global Prevalence of Adolescent Idiopathic Scoliosis Between 1975 and 2025. the systematic review, and meta-analysis. This systematic review and meta-analysis estimated global AIS prevalence from 57,701 screened records spanning 1975 to 2025, including radiographically confirmed cases in adolescents aged 10 to 19. Pooled prevalence was 1.26%, 95% confidence interval, 1.03 to 1.55 for COB greater than or equal to 10 degrees, and 0.28%, 95% confidence interval, 0.23 to 0.34 for COB greater than or equal to 20 degrees. Multivariable meta-regression identified non-orthopedic screening personnel, odds ratio equals 2.04, higher mean surface air temperature, odds ratio equals 1.03, and higher study quality, odds ratio equals 1.40, as independently associated with higher detected prevalence of curves greater than or equal to 20 degrees, while forward bending test alone was associated with lower detected prevalence, odds ratio equals 0.64. One limitation to note is that the temperature association is derived from ecological level meta-regression data and cannot establish individual level causality. Overall, global pooled prevalence of AIS is 1.26% for COB greater than or equal to 10 degrees, and 0.28% for COB greater than or equal to 20 degrees. With higher ambient temperature, odds ratio equals 1.03, non-orthopedic screeners, odds ratio equals 2.04, and higher study quality, odds ratio equals 1.40, independently associated with greater detected prevalence of curves greater than or equal to 20 degrees. Moving on. Chen and colleagues published in JOA, titled Sensor-Based Gait Recovery Analysis After Total Hip and Knee Arthroplasty, a one-year follow-up study integrating muscle strength and patient-reported outcomes. This prospective cohort evaluated gait recovery, isokinetic muscle strength, and patient-reported outcome measures in patients greater than or equal to 70 with KL3 or 4 osteoarthritis undergoing total hip arthroplasty or total knee arthroplasty at 5 time points over 1 year. Total knee arthroplasty patients had persistent gait asymmetry through 3 months, normalizing by 6 months, while total hip arthroplasty patients showed only transient asymmetry at 1 month. Preoperative muscle strength was the dominant predictor of 12-month gait speed, and 94% of total hip arthroplasty and 92% of total knee arthroplasty patients achieved PASS by 12 months. One limitation to note is the small single-center cohort with no randomization or control arm, which precludes causal inference about prehabilitation. Overall, preoperative muscle strength, not radiographic severity, is the strongest predictor of 12-month gait speed after total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty in patients greater than or equal to 70 years. Moving on, Vendrig and colleagues published in KSSTA, titled Association Between Tibiofemoral Bone and Meniscus Morphology and Dynamic Tibiofemoral Movements During Jump Landing Tasks in Patients Following Anterior Cruciate Ligament Reconstruction. This study examined whether preoperative MRI-derived tibiofemoral bone and meniscus morphology predicted dynamic anterior tibial translation and internal tibial rotation during single-leg hop for distance and side hop tasks measured with 3D optoelectronic motion capture in 30 patients post-anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction. Steeper lateral posterior tibial slope and greater medial lateral slope difference correlated with less anterior tibial translation and greater internal tibial rotation, peak R equals plus or minus 0.75, but only in the flat medial plateau subgroup. Greater lateral femoral condyle ratio independently predicted greater internal tibial rotation during both tasks, peak R up to 0.56, and smaller lateral meniscal posterior horn slope predicted greater internal tibial rotation during single leg hop, peak R equals negative 0.46. One limitation to note is that the critical slope internal tibial rotation associations were derived from a subgroup of only 13 patients, making these correlations statistically fragile. Overall, in anterior cruciate ligament reconstructed knees, steeper lateral posterior tibial slope correlates with greater internal tibial rotation during jump landing, peak R equals 0.75, but only in the subgroup with a flat medial tibial plateau, limiting the generalizability of slope-reducing osteotomy as an adjunct procedure. Moving on, Gardner and colleagues published in European Spine Journal, titled Kyphosis, Lordosis, and Height Velocity, What is the effect of rate of growth on the development of the sagittal parameters of the spine in normal children? This study examined whether height velocity influences sagittal spinal shape development in normal children aged 9 to 18, using ICI-2 surface topography and linear mixed effects modeling. In females, both kyphosis and lordosis decreased as height velocity rose from 0 to 4 cm per year, and then plateaued. Males showed minimal kyphosis change across all velocities, with modest lordosis variation between 5 and 6 cm per year. A statistically significant sex difference existed for lordosis, but not kyphosis. One limitation to note is that surface topography does not capture true vertebral end plate angles, so reported changes cannot be directly compared to radiographic Cobb-based normative data. Overall, in 196 children aged 9 to 18, increasing height velocity from 0 to 4 cm per year was associated with decreasing kyphosis and lordosis in females, with a statistically significant sex difference for lordosis, but not kyphosis. Moving on, Pong Chiron and colleagues published in International Orthopedics, titled, Does Tibia Vera Increase Medial Knee Pain Following Cemented Mobile Bearing Unicompartmental Knee Arthroplasty? A prospective comparative study. This prospective comparative study asked whether preoperative tibia vera adversely affects medial knee pain and functional outcomes after cemented mobile bearing unicompartmental knee arthroplasty. 150 knees were stratified by tibial morphology and followed to 24 months using visual analog score, knee society score, OKS, knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score, FJS and Kujala scores, analyzed with generalized estimating equations. Visual analog scores for medial knee pain were similar between the tibia vera and normal tibia groups at 2 years, 0.2 versus 0.3, and postoperative ATFA was significantly lower in the tibia vera group, 0.0 degrees versus 3.4 degrees, with no complications in either group. One limitation to note is that 2-year follow-up is insufficient to assess whether the lower postoperative ATFA in the tibia vera group translates into differential implant survivorship over time. Overall, preoperative tibia vera does not increase medial knee pain or worsen any patient-reported outcome at 2 years following cemented mobile-bearing unicompartmental knee arthroplasty, with visual analog scores of 0.2 versus 0.3 between tibia vera and normal tibia groups. Moving on, Wang and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled CMS Proposed Substantial Clinical Benefit Thresholds Correlate with Patient-Reported Measures After Primary Total Joint Arthroplasty, Improvement, Satisfaction, and Willingness to Repeat Surgery. This study asked whether CMS proposed SCB thresholds for WHO's JR and knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score, JR, are clinically valid predictors of patient satisfaction, improvement, and willingness to repeat TJA. Using logistic regression and anchor-based ROC analysis on 3,465 cases from the Mark Kwai Registry, preoperative scores were poor predictors, AUC less than 0.6, while postoperative score change was strongly predictive for both total hip arthroplasty, AUC 0.77 to 0.85, and total knee arthroplasty, AUC 0.71 to 0.79. Uden index-derived thresholds closely approximated CMS benchmarks, and 20% of patients failed to achieve the proposed SCB cutoffs. One limitation to note is that single-institution data from a high-volume academic registry may not reflect the case mix of community or low-volume centers. Overall, CMS proposed SCB thresholds of 22 points, WHO's JR, and 20 points, knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score JR, are externally validated, with ROC-derived optimal thresholds of 24 to 26 points for total hip arthroplasty and 21 to 24 points for total knee arthroplasty, depending on anchor, and 20% of patients failed to meet CMS benchmarks. Moving on, Yang and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Comparison of Large Language Models with Rules-Based Natural Language Processing Algorithms for Extracting Data from Operative Notes. This study evaluated whether LLM-based extraction pipelines could outperform existing rules-based NLP algorithms in extracting 3 registry-relevant data points, surgical approach, bearing surface, and fixation technique from primary total hip arthroplasty operative notes. 2 human annotators labeled 1,000 notes. LLMs were tested against rules-based NLP on a held-out set of 719 notes. LLMs achieved superior accuracy for all three fields. Surgical approach 96% versus 94%. Bearing surface 89% versus 74%. And fixation technique 96% versus 95%. With 80% accuracy on ambiguous bearing surface notes. One limitation to note is that the single institution dataset means LLM prompts were iteratively customized to one center's operative note style, and accuracy on external institution notes is untested. Overall, LLM-based extraction pipelines outperformed rules-based NLP algorithms for bearing surface identification, 89% versus 74% accuracy across 719 total hip arthroplasty operative notes, with LLMs correctly inferring bearing surface in 80% of ambiguous notes. Moving on, Liu and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled MRI Assessment of Median Nerve Size in Patients with Proximate Electrodiagnostic Studies. This study evaluated whether MRI measured median nerve CSA at three carpal tunnel levels, DRUJ, inlet-outlet, correlates with EDX-confirmed CTS diagnosis in patients who underwent both studies within 90 days. Inlet CSA was the only level with a statistically significant difference between EDX-positive and EDX-negative groups, 14.4 versus 11.1 mm squared. But the optimal cutoff of 11.3 mm squared yielded AUC 0.67, sensitivity 74%, and specificity 60%. DRUJ and outlet CSA measurements showed no significant between group differences. One limitation to note is that the 90-day interval between MRI and EDX introduces temporal variability in disease severity, potentially misclassifying patients whose CTS status changed between studies. Overall, MRI measured median nerve CSA at the carpal tunnel inlet, cutoff 11.3 mm squared, achieves only AUC 0.67, with 74% sensitivity and 60% specificity for EDX-confirmed CTS, indicating poor to fair diagnostic accuracy. Moving on, Vasugi and colleagues published in JOA, titled Outcomes of Total Knee Arthroplasty in Patients Receiving Chronic Antithrombotic Therapy, a Systematic Review. This systematic review examined perioperative and longer-term total knee arthroplasty outcomes across antithrombotic drug classes, antiplatelet, warfarin, DOAC, versus non-anticoagulated controls across 17 retrospective studies through October 2025. Warfarin was consistently associated with increased blood loss, transfusion requirement, and prolonged hospitalization, while antiplatelet therapy showed no consistent perioperative harm. DOAC use was associated with lower periprosthetic joint infection and wound dehiscence rates, though heterogeneous outcome reporting precluded meta-analytic pooling. One limitation to note is that all 17 included studies were retrospective, and heterogeneous outcome definitions precluded meta-analysis. Overall, among 104,182 total knee arthroplasty patients on chronic antithrombotic therapy, warfarin was associated with greater blood loss, higher transfusion rates, longer hospitalization, and elevated MI and pulmonary embolism risk compared to antiplatelet agents and DOACs, while DOAC use correlated with lower rates of periprosthetic joint infection and wound dehiscence. Moving on, Chul Hyun and colleagues published in JSES, titled Clinical Impact of Scapular Stress Fracture After Reverse Total Shoulder Arthroplasty, a Single Center Propensity Score Matched Analysis. This study quantified the clinical impact of scapular stress fracture after primary reverse total shoulder arthroplasty by comparing 28 SSF patients to 84 propensity score matched controls across patient-reported and functional outcomes. Visual analog score, UCLA, ASES, and SSV scores did not differ significantly between groups, but SSF patients had significantly lower forward flexion, 126.1 degrees versus 136.2 degrees, and abduction, 103.2 degrees versus 117.3 degrees. Levy type 3 fractures produced the worst range of motion, while neither operative versus non-operative treatment nor radiographic union status influenced final outcomes. One limitation to note is that the small SSF cohort is underpowered to detect meaningful differences in outcomes between operative and non-operative treatment subgroups. Overall, scapular stress fracture after reverse total shoulder arthroplasty, incidence 5.4%, does not impair patient-reported outcomes, but reduces final forward flexion by 10.1 degrees. and adduction by 14.1 degrees compared to matched controls, with Levy type 3 fractures carrying the worst range of motion prognosis. Moving on, Sribasham and colleagues published in JOA, titled More Technology But Similar Early Safety, Robotic versus Conventional Unicompartmental Knee Arthroplasty, a 30-day outcome, national database study. This study used NSQIP 2022-2024 to compare 30-day adverse events between robotic and conventional unicompartmental knee arthroplasty using CPT 27446. And the dedicated NSQIP robot use variable, with 1-2 propensity matching, achieving all SMDs less than 0.1. Robotic unicompartmental knee arthroplasty had longer operative times and higher outpatient rates, 92.2% versus 80.9%, but no significant differences in any adverse event category, minor or infectious complications. COPD was the sole significant predictor of adverse events in robotic unicompartmental knee arthroplasty patients. Odds ratio 9.442. One limitation to note is that the 30-day follow-up window cannot capture the outcomes most relevant to robotic unicompartmental knee arthroplasty's purported benefit. Component positioning accuracy, alignment, and mid to long-term survivorship. Overall, after propensity matching, robotic unicompartmental knee arthroplasty produced longer operative times, 86.1 versus 78.9 minutes, and shorter hospital stays, 0.4 versus 0.6 days, but no significant difference in 30-day adverse events, 3.4% versus 2.1% compared to conventional unicompartmental knee arthroplasty. Moving on, Gill and colleagues published in JSES, titled The Impact of Glenoid Polyethylene Type, Humeral Head Size and Composition on Revision Risk Following Primary Anatomic Total Shoulder Arthroplasty for Osteoarthritis. This registry-based retrospective cohort examined whether humeral head size and composition modify the revision risk benefit of XLPE versus non-XLPE glenoids in primary ATSA for osteoarthritis. XLPE glenoids showed superior 15-year survivorship overall, 6.0% versus 11.4% CPR, hazard ratio 1.45, but the benefit was confined to metal heads in the 44 to 50 millimeter range. No XLPE advantage existed with the smallest, less than 44 millimeters, or largest, greater than 50 millimeters heads. Paradoxically, metal XLPE bearings with less than 44 millimeter heads carried higher revision risk than metal non-XLPE, and ceramic heads eliminated the XLPE benefit regardless of size. One limitation to note is the absence of revision cause data in the registry, which prevents determination of whether subgroup differences reflect polyethylene wear, aseptic loosening, instability, or implant-specific design factors. Overall, XLPE glenoids demonstrated 47.4% lower 15-year cumulative revision rate versus non-XLPE, 6.0% versus 11.4%. Hazard ratio 1.45, but this benefit was absent with ceramic heads and reversed with metal heads less than 44 millimeters. Moving on, Bauer and colleagues published in JOA, titled Comparison of 90-Day Complications Between Direct Anterior and Posterolateral Lateral Total Hip Arthroplasty in Morbidly Obese Patients. This retrospective study compared 90-day complications between DA and PL approaches in 365 morbidly obese, body mass index greater than or equal to 40, primary total hip arthroplasty patients at a single institution from 2017 to 2022. Operative time was significantly shorter with DA, 71 versus 92 minutes, and penalized logistic regression showed reduced periprosthetic fracture risk with DA. Odds ratio 0.08, 95% confidence interval, 0.01 to 0.89, though higher cementation rates in the DA group confound this finding. On adjusted analysis, overall 90-day complication rates did not differ significantly between approaches, and morbidly obese patients had higher complication rates than non-morbidly obese patients, regardless of approach. One limitation to note is that the significantly higher cementation rate in the DA group is an uncontrolled confounder that renders the periprosthetic fracture risk reduction uninterpretable as an approach effect. Overall, in morbidly obese total hip arthroplasty patients, body mass index greater than or equal to 40, the direct anterior approach produced significantly shorter operative times, 71 versus 92 minutes, and lower revision risk on sensitivity analysis, odds ratio 0.31. But overall 90-day complication rates were statistically equivalent between DA and PL after multivariate adjustment. Moving on, Camijo and colleagues published in American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Preoperative Proximal Migration of the Radial Head as an Independent Predictor of Suboptimal Outcomes After Osteochondral Autograft Transplantation for Capitellar Osteochondritis Dissecans, a Retrospective Cohort Study. This study evaluated preoperative radiographic predictors of suboptimal outcomes, TA score less than 160, in adolescent athletes undergoing OAT for capitellar OCD. On multivariate logistic regression, proximal radial head migration was the sole independent predictor, adjusted odds ratio 1.47 mm, 95% confidence interval 1.03 to 2.09, with an ROC-derived cutoff of 2.2 mm, sensitivity 56%, specificity 84%. Range of motion and TA scores improved significantly in all patients, and 100% returned to sport. But 19 of 69 elbows, 28%, had suboptimal outcomes. One limitation to note is that retrospective single-center design with only 69 elbows limits generalizability and statistical power to detect additional independent predictors. Overall, preoperative proximal radial head migration greater than 2.2 millimeters independently predicts suboptimal outcomes after OAT for capitellar OCD, adjusted odds ratio 1.47 per 1 millimeter increase, AUC 0.72. with 28% of adolescent athletes failing to achieve a Timmerman-Andrews score greater than or equal to 160. Luo and colleagues published in JOA, titled Conversion Total Knee Arthroplasty After Tibial Plateau Fracture, Open Reduction and Internal Fixation, a Propensity-Matched Analysis of 90-Day and 1- and 3-Year Outcomes. This study queried a national de-identified database, 2003-2023, to compare outcomes of conversion total knee arthroplasty within 10 years of TPF open reduction and internal fixation versus propensity-matched primary total knee arthroplasty. Conversion total knee arthroplasty demonstrated relative risk 2.73, 3.18 for periprosthetic joint infection, and relative risk 2.29, 2.50 for revision total knee arthroplasty across all follow-up periods, with 30-day remission also elevated, relative risk 2.43. A tiered secondary analysis isolated dual risk contributors. The intra-articular fracture itself confers baseline hazard, and prior hardware adds an independent incremental risk above that baseline. One limitation to note is that the database lacks Schatzker classification, hardware specifics, and interval from open reduction and internal fixation to conversion, preventing risk stratification by fracture severity. Overall, conversion total knee arthroplasty after tibial plateau fracture open reduction and internal fixation carries a 2.73, 3.18x increased risk of periprosthetic joint infection and 2.29, 2.50x increased risk of revision total knee arthroplasty compared to propensity-matched primary total knee arthroplasty at up to 3 years. Moving on, Richard and colleagues published in Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics, titled Back Pain in Adolescents and Young Adults, a Retrospective Review of Psychosocial Factors and Treatment Strategies. This single-institution retrospective review examined 869 patients aged 7 to 22 presenting with back pain in 2021 to determine predictors of symptom persistence. Structural diagnoses: spondylolisthesis 14.6%, scoliosis 14.3% were present in 37.6% of patients. Yet pain severity did not differ between structural and non-structural groups, 5.6 versus 5.5. On multivariable regression, behavioral health diagnoses, adjusted odds ratio 1.78, and pain severity per point, adjusted odds ratio 1.12, predicted persistence, while structural pathology did not. One limitation to note is that follow-up duration is not standardized or reported, making the definition of persistent symptoms inconsistent across patients. Overall, in 869 adolescents with back pain, behavioral health diagnoses present in 37.7% independently predicted symptom persistence, adjusted odds ratio 1.78, 95% confidence interval 1.32 2.41, while structural diagnosis did not. Moving on, Barton and colleagues published in JOA titled Incidence of Postoperative Patellar Crepitus in Total Knee Arthroplasty with Unresurfaced Patellae in Cruciate Retaining and Posterior Stabilized Designs. This retrospective study examined patellar crepitus incidence in 845 unresurfaced TKAs comparing PS and CR implant designs with minimum one-year follow-up. Overall crepitus incidence was 9.8%. PS knees developed crepitus at significantly higher rates than CR knees, 12.3% versus 5.7%, with femoral implant design independently associated with crepitus. Only 16.9% of crepitus cases were symptomatic, and reoperation was required in 6 patients, 0.7% of total cohort. One limitation to note is that mean follow-up duration is not reported, and minimum one-year follow-up is insufficient to capture late-onset crepitus or progressive patellar wear. Overall, in unresurfaced total knee arthroplasty, PS designs produced patellar crepitus at more than twice the rate of CR designs, 12.3% versus 5.7%. Though only 14 of 83 crepitus cases were symptomatic, and only 6 required reoperation. Keki and colleagues published in American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled, Quadriceps tendon autografts are associated with increased short-term reoperation rates for extension deficit or pain and inferior patient-reported outcomes compared with hamstring tendon autografts. An analysis of 5,653 cases of primary anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction. This retrospective cohort compared non-revision reoperation rates and knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score-based patient-reported outcome measures across HT, bone patellar tendon bone, and quadriceps tendon autografts in 5,653 primary ACLRs from 2015 to 2022. Quadriceps tendon autografts carried an 11.9% reoperation rate for extension deficit or pain versus 5.5% HT and 4.7% bone patellar tendon bone and were independently associated with this outcome, odds ratio 1.96. Quadriceps tendon patients also had lower odds of achieving the COOS-4 minimal important change, odds ratio 0.56 versus HT. And higher odds of treatment failure, odds ratio 1.98, while female patients receiving larger quadriceps tendon grafts, 9.5 to 12.0 millimeters, had 72% higher odds of reoperation for extension deficit or pain. One limitation to note is that rehabilitation protocol heterogeneity across the study period and institutions was not controlled, making it impossible to determine whether excess extension deficit reoperations reflect a graft-specific biological property or a systematic difference in postoperative management. Overall, quadriceps tendon autografts had a 19.2% overall reoperation rate at 2 years versus 8.9% for hamstring and 6.9% for bone patellar tendon bone, driven by a nearly twofold independent risk of reoperation for extension deficit or pain, odds ratio 1.96. Moving on, Abul and colleagues published in JOA, titled Diagnostic Accuracy of Artificial Intelligence Systems in Early Prediction of Dislocation and Aseptic Loosening After Total Hip Arthroplasty. This study asked whether AI systems could predict dislocation and aseptic loosening from immediate postoperative AP pelvic radiographs in 1,045 primary total hip arthroplasty patients followed for a mean of 11.6 years. 3 AI systems were compared. The top performer achieved AUC 0.91 to 0.90 for dislocation aseptic loosening, with the lowest performing system reaching only AUC 0.79 to 0.77. Over follow-up, 34 patients dislocated and 22 developed aseptic loosening, with 989 remaining complication-free. One limitation to note is that the AI systems are not named or described, and it is unclear whether validation was performed on a held-out dataset or the same cohort used for model development, raising serious concern for overfitting. Overall, the best-performing AI system achieved AUC 0.91 for dislocation and 0.90 for aseptic loosening prediction from first-day postoperative AP pelvic radiographs in primary total hip arthroplasty at mean 11.6-year follow-up. Moving on, Altoon and colleagues published in American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Primary Anterior Cruciate Ligament Repair and Reconstruction in Isolated Anterior Cruciate Ligament Ruptures, Forgotten Joint Scores, and the Association Between Residual Laxity and Joint Awareness. This retrospective cohort compared primary anterior cruciate ligament repair versus hamstring autograft reconstruction in carefully selected proximal anterior cruciate ligament tears. Using the FJS-12 as the primary patient-reported joint awareness outcome alongside conventional metrics. No between-group differences were detected in Lysholm, International Knee Documentation Committee, Tegner, postoperative Lachman, or pivot shift laxity, or re-rupture rates. The repair group reported significantly higher FJS-12 scores, 87.0 versus 77.5. And multivariable regression identified residual postoperative laxity as independently associated with lower FJS-12 values in both Lachman and pivot shift-based models. One limitation to note is that retrospective, non-randomized design with surgeon-directed patient selection for repair versus reconstruction introduces substantial confounding that cannot be fully corrected by multivariable regression. Overall, primary anterior cruciate ligament repair yielded significantly higher forgotten joint score 12 values than hamstring autograft reconstruction, 87.0 versus 77.5, mean difference 9.5 points, despite equivalent Lysholm, International Knee Documentation Committee, Tegner, laxity, and return to sport outcomes. Moving on. Park and colleagues published in JOA, titled Modular Fluted Tapered Stems in Periprosthetic Femoral Fractures. Curved stems are protective against intraoperative fracture and postoperative subsidence. This single institution retrospective study compared straight versus curved modular fluted tapered stems in 89 revision THAs performed for Vancouver B2 and B3 periprosthetic femoral fractures. Intraoperative diaphyseal split fractures occurred in 11.2% and cortical perforations in 5.6%. Multivariate regression identified curved stem use as independently protective against both intraoperative fracture and greater than or equal to 5 mm subsidence. Mean modified Harris hip score was 83 at final follow-up, with 94.6% implant survivorship free of re-revision at 10 years. One limitation to note is that retrospective non-randomized design with surgeon-selected stem geometry means unmeasured anatomic variables likely influenced both stem choice and outcomes. Overall, curved modular fluted tapered stems independently reduced intraoperative diaphyseal fracture risk and greater than or equal to 5 mm stem subsidence compared to straight stems in periprosthetic femoral fracture revision, with 94.6% re-revision-free survivalship at 10 years. And finally, Fillon and colleagues published in American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Arthroscopic Correction of Pincer-Type FAI in the Presence of Acetabular Retroversion, results in excellent patient-reported outcomes with low risk of reoperation or conversion to arthroplasty at minimum 5 years. This study evaluated patient-reported outcome measures and survivorship after hip arthroscopy in patients with moderate to global acetabular retroversion, crossover sign plus ischial spine sign and or posterior wall sign versus matched controls with focal retroversion only. Both groups showed significant improvement across all patient-reported outcome measures, MHHS, SF36 quality of life score, UCLA, Western Ontario and McMaster University's Arthritis Index, with revision arthroscopy rates of 6% in each group and arthroplasty-free survivorship of 98.2% versus 98.8%. PASS achievement rates were statistically equivalent between groups across all outcome measures, MHHS 62.1% versus 65.9%. One limitation to note is that the study excludes tennis grade greater than 1 and has a 90% male cohort, meaning findings cannot be applied to older patients with early osteoarthritis, or to the female predominant population in whom global retroversion is most clinically relevant. Overall, hip arthroscopy for moderate to global acetabular retroversion achieved 98.2% arthroplasty-free survivorship and 81% patient satisfaction at 5 years, with no conversions to KAO. equivalent to matched controls with focal retroversion only. That wraps up this week's Ortho Digest Rundown, 25 studies reviewed. Head to orthodigest.com for the full write-ups. Until next week, stay current.